Blog Talk Radio.
History is a clock that people use to tell their political and cultural time of day. It is also a compass that people use to find themselves on the map of human geography. History tells of people where they have been and what they have been, where they are and what they are. Most important, history tells a people where they still must go, what they still must be. The relationship of history to the people is the same as the relationship of a mother to her child.
For African people, nothing important happens without a libation. And so for this very important presentation, we begin by the pouring of libation. We pour libation first to our first ancestor, to that hidden one who, though hidden, manifests in all things as all things, that God-goddess idea in the universe by any and all names. To our first ancestor, we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the first people on this planet, mothers and fathers of all mankind, flashpoint of the human family. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because they were the ones who first gave birth to the idea of civilization, knew we would need a form of governance, and they nurtured that idea along the Nile until it reached its zenith in Kemet. There they built these gigantic monuments as evidence of that great civilization, and they carved instructions on the walls of temples and tombs for us so we would never forget. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our ancestors because over time they put together all the tenets of civilization and they took those ideas and left the continent. They were the people of the first Exodus. They left Africa and went all over the world and peopled the world. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. We pour libation too to our ancestors because they did not sit on their laurels. They continued to improve, continued to evolve, and at each point of evolution, they again would leave the continent and settle and resettle the planet. They met themselves coming and going. To those ancestors we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time, they found themselves the object of a forced exodus. When they were kidnapped, shackled, cargoed, shipped out of Africa and enslaved in diasporas around the world. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to the ancestors left at home, the very young, the aged, the infirm, left to reinvent themselves, depleted of us, human resources. But they were enjoined by us in the diaspora, both objects of a global miasma that ruptured the soul of a people as it ravaged a continent. To those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to those ancestors because over time they began to remember who and what they were. Because no matter where they had been dropped off, they still retained bits and pieces of who and what they were. They retained that African core that describes them. They began to remember bits and pieces of a song. They began to remember lines from a rhythm. They began to remember dances that they did in ancient times. They began to remember those ancient drum beats that they now beat out on bare skin. And so to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to them because they then began to teach each other. They began to resurrect and reconstruct that history and that culture. They became the new Africans wherever they were. They became the new teachers, preachers, archaeologists, the new singers, dancers, the new drummers, the new Jalia. They reconstructed that history and our culture and became new Africans everywhere. So to those ancestors, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation to those ancestors because they are the ones who passed that information on to us. And so we pour libation to those of you who will watch this presentation, those of you who are the recipients of that pieced together history, of that reconstructed culture. To you, we pour libation, Ashe. Pour libation too to our children and those yet to be born, for they are the ones that you must teach. And you can only teach if you know the history. So to you who are learning the history and are passing on that history, and to our children who are learning that history and will pass that history on to all eternity, but they will call your name in all eternity. To our children we pour libation. Ashe. Ashe. Asheo.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society, which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank, and they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal, put in the Sankofa Historical Society, and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening. 6 o'clock, Warriors Way Radio, continuing the fight.
Hotep family. Hotep, this is your brother, Kwazi. Shuja Kawatu, your warrior for the people. All right, we're back again. We have a wonderful program. We're blessed to have a clinical psychiatrist, Dr. Reverend Mark Fossey, CEO of MNS Clinical Services. I see that we have Sister Dee Dee. She does ancestral profiles with the Sankofa Council of Milwaukee, and she does a wonderful job there. And so we're blessed just to have listeners and everything that's been going on for us to, you know, maintain ourselves and try to stay in this fight and help as many people as we can come to their African state of mind. Today's program, Suffering in Silence. And when we say that, in my thinking, you know, with so many people that are in need, whether it be unemployment, help with domestic issues at home, some simple things can turn, or substance abuse, but all of those things can accumulate and just become too much for any one individual. And so many times, we just keep it to ourselves. You know, there's people out there that can help us and have made a profession in helping us, but we're not reaching out or making ourselves available, and a lot of it is our own fault. You know, it's the ego involved, but we just don't want to reach out, and we feel that we're weaker when we ask for help and so forth. So we're going to address those problems a little later. But first, I'm going to go with an ancestral profile. Today's ancestral profile is going to be on Samuel Edgar Langford. He was born March 4th, 1883, and he transitioned January 12th, 1956. Now, he was known as the Boston Tar Baby. And when I say that, you know, that was a name that they gave him, and, you know, that's basically what they called a lot of black fighters back in that day. But he was called the Boston Tar Baby, Boston Terror, the Boston Bone Crusher. And he was a black Canadian boxer standout of the early part of the 20th century. And he was called the greatest fighter that nobody knows by ESPN. We got some background noise. I'm not sure where that's coming from, but if you can just mute your phone while we do this, then that's going to eliminate that noise. Okay, and so he was known Boston, the Boston Bone Crusher, Boston Terror, and his most famous nickname was the Boston Tar Baby. Langford, he stood 5'6.5", and he weighed 185 pounds. Now, in his prime, he fought from the light heavyweight to the heavyweight, and he defeated many world champions, legends of his time, and in each weight class, considered a devastating puncher, even at heavyweight. Now, Langford was ranked number 2 by the ring of the list of 100 greatest punchers of all time. One boxing historian described Langford as experienced as a heavyweight, James Toney, with the punching power of Mike Tyson. Now, he has been ranked among boxing's 10 best heavyweights in the world 14 times. He was ranked number 1. And from 1910 to 1913, he was also ranked as the best middleweight in 1907 and 5th best welterweight in 1903. Now, he was denied a shot of many world championships due to his color. And by the refusal of Jack Johnson, the first African-American world heavyweight champion, to fight him in a rematch. Because he did fight Jack Johnson. They went 15 rounds. And Jack Johnson stated that there's just no way he would fight him because he wanted to be the champ. And Langford was just such a devastating puncher, and he could beat anybody. And those were the words of Jack Johnson. Those were the words of also Jack Dempsey talked about Langford as just being a devastating puncher, and that's somebody he would not want to fight because he's got a good chance of losing because Langford was that good. But again, he was unknown in regards to his not by boxers, but by the boxing world. He did win titles in different countries, but he never won any. He wasn't recognized as a champion in the United States. He was born in Nova Scotia, Langford. Left home as a youth, and he escaped abuse from his father. He was on his way to Boston, where he eventually found a work as a janitor in a boxing gymnasium, and that's where they discovered he had some talent, and they put him in the ring. He started sparring. He won an amateur featherweight championship at the age of 15. Now, Langford boxed and fought great fights from lightweight division right up to heavyweights, beating many champions in the process. However, he was never able to secure a title himself, despite the fact that Langford received a chance to fight for Jack Johnson's heavyweight title in Ring Magazine. And he was, and again, he was rated one of the 10 best heavyweights of all time, of all time. Now, he had a record, and when they talk about his boxing record, he's got 211 wins, 126 by KO, and said he had, in some articles it shows he had 19 losses, and some it shows that he has 40-something losses and 40-something, 46 draws. Back then, how they kept records, because he had to fight a lot of black fighters before he fought some white fighters, and when he did fight some white fighters, he did fight in some championships. But he did not. He was not. He was awarded the victory, but not the belt, because they indicated that he missed a weight. So he came in over the weight. So that disqualified him from getting the belt. And so it was always some type of situation. But again, you know, he was one of the most devastating punchers of all time, and his name was Samuel Edgar Langford. He was only 5'6" and a half, 185 pounds, but again, he started off at lightweight. So that's our ancestral profile. Okay, family. Brother Mark Fossey, how you doing? Are you with us?
I'm doing well, Brother Kwazi. I'm doing real good. Thank you. Start off with a little correction. I'm not a psychiatrist. People who go to medical school and then they dispense medicine. I didn't go to medical school, and I'm definitely not going to dispense no medicine. but the psychotherapeutic stuff, which I am a psychotherapist, and you said CEO of MNS Clinical Services, a clinic in our community since 1996. I just wanted to make that, you know, that correction.
Oh, no, thank
and stuff
you. I appreciate that. Most definitely needed. I don't want to put you in that situation, not at all.
No.
So I guess one of the things, and I'm glad that you're here, because, you know, when we think about some of the issues that's been plaguing the community with violence and how people seem to be, I don't see that there's organizations out there that's working with people in the manner in which, I don't know, that it probably are some organizations. I know one, 414 for Life, but you know, it's a different training, I think, and their approach to dealing with situations in the schools and in the communities. And I know that one of the things that they were doing was that if there was an incident that happened, like a fight, a shooting, or something like that, and the police were called to investigate, they also got a heads up on that situation. And then they would go over there and try to help mediate that situation some type of way by letting people know that, hey, you don't want to go down the path that I went, and so forth.
Right.
And the only problem I have with some of that is that a lot of those guys that have served time and got out, and I'm not saying that they're not qualified to teach or educate people in certain ways and so forth, but a lot of them are still having a lot of different struggles because on a financial level, you know, a lot of those guys aren't working. And there was one of the guys not too long ago had committed suicide. So it is a struggle how people look at you and how you're not accepted when you come out, although you paid your time. And so I don't know if there's mixed messages coming across and how that's going. I know I've been involved in a number of meetings and sit downs with them, and you know, they've been pretty good. And we were over at some of the schools in the Milwaukee area when they had some crisis, and the principal and different administrators will call us in and sit down with the parents and the students, and you know, we would have a discussion. But you know, like I said, we just had the incident a couple weeks ago where we had the young man kill his girlfriend, then kill the 3-year-old child, or baby, and then shot himself. And a lot of people have problems with that because they're like, well, how could he shoot himself? Because something else must have happened because he was all beat up. And how that may have happened, and because what happened, and I'm saying this just from my police contact, and I talked to people, and that when he had shot and killed the wife, I mean, not the wife, the girlfriend and the baby, he called some friends up to help him get rid of the bodies. And so I don't know if they had part in him getting beat up or somebody else or whatever, but and he eventually shot himself. But the point is, and I guess the point that I'm making is that he made a phone call, and he called some people up. And I'm sure he called some people up prior to that saying that he was mad and that he was going to get her. And so one of the so part of the program the other day was, if you know something, say something. And and it's the same thing with people that are in need. But we got this thing where we feel that we shouldn't be handling, we should handle these problems by ourselves. And I guess I'm going to ask you to kind of elaborate on that. I mean, clearly we need help, but what do you think in those situations and scenarios?
Well, I think, first of all, I know there are agencies and their agents and people and spiritual groups from Sankofa, the churches, on and on and on, who are attempting to, you know, work in the struggle that we have in terms of our mental health. First of all, there's a level of denial, and I think we're probably out of the denial state now because, as you indicated, Brother Kwazi, it's pretty blatant that we have some strong issues in our community.
Mm-hmm.
I believe, though, you know, if we kind of rear back the tape, remember now, African Americans weren't always mental health has not been an inviting field for us. You know, we didn't have people to look like you and I to talk to. I'm so proud of people in the age group, if you will, my cohorts who are under me, the people like Dr. Ramel Smith and those brothers and sisters who are coming, when I say behind me because I'm getting old, but, you know, I've been in this field long enough to know that it was twos and fews of us. And not only were there few of us, but the people who handle the purse string, the people who do the policies and procedures don't look like us. And oftentimes it wasn't to their benefit, or they didn't have the love for the community to execute programming and, you know, things that would, you know, be of our interests. So I think we got to start off with it wasn't such an inviting field to be in. And as you indicated before, this whole issue of being weak, this whole issue of who do I turn to, who do I talk to. Well, we used to have built in our community support systems where we did talk to people. Mentoring is nothing new to us. I grew up in a time where it was the Boys Club at the time, LeVarne Way.
Mm-hmm.
And they were not clinicians, but they were They were black males who were role models, who corrected us, who gave us recreational things to do, who basically counseled us. So built in our community were, we may not have had clinicians in the true sense of, you know, like doctors and stuff like that, but we doctored ourselves. We had family systems that were functional enough that we could, you know, they added, you know, Miss Jones could whoop you and send you home, and you would get, but it right. wasn't the whooping, it was the correction, you know.
Right.
We had moral fibers. We had, you know, we're starting to see this escape us, as Brother Alfonso Watkins would say, we've lost our African mind,
mm-hmm.
and you know, who we were, and the resilience of, you know, the new coin word, now, it's not new, but trauma this, trauma that.
Right.
You know? We grew out of trauma, and we had strength as a result of that. So
right.
I think if we reframe it and look at it, and some of the answers are going to be us going back into our natural environments and the natural self of who we are. We're a spiritual people, and get back mm-hmm. into our spirituality, whatever that looks like, you know, because African-Americans or blacks are very diverse in what we believe, but we believe in a true and living God, and we practice that, you know. Even those who weren't in, you know, some form of religion, if you will,
right.
Conformed, you know, oh, man, that's Deacon Jones. Watch out. Don't, you know. But now we don't have that. The whole thing has went parlay. But back to the original order, I think that there are, I know that there, you know, you cited 414. You got one of the things
right.
that we're organizations that we're involved in, M&S Clinical. Well, first of all, we're located at 2821 North Vail Phillips Avenue, the old 4th Street, you know, Locust,
right.
you know. So we've been there since 2000 or whatever. And we're in the community, 53212. We need more people in the community, 53206 is those areas where we talk about the narrative being so bad, but you got to be in the community with people, not in ivory
mm-hmm.
towers on various places,
right.
and look and be like the people in the sense of, you know, acceptance and the sense of love. Love is a key underlying of all this. You can write all the programs you want, but if you don't care about people, it resonates with them, and they really don't have a feel for you. So West Care,
right.
Wisconsin, which is the old Harambe, as we knew Harambe to be. We're a part of that, and it's called a Pulling Together for a Drug-Free Community. And basically what you have is a consortium of organizations that are that's in that area, to include Martin Luther King Elementary, you know, and we work together, you know. We try to have a system where there's no wrong door, so we have various things from daycare centers to clinicians. On Wednesday, food is given out, and, you know, we talk to people. We get informal referrals from the community as a result of that. So we're going to have to start looking out, you know, and have an investment for our own. And there are various organizations that are doing it, but we're kind of split in that area. To me, as long as you split, the body is not together, you know. And I'm not saying we're adversarial. We're just not together working on one accord, because you're doing your thing here and I'm doing mine there. And that's good that we're doing
right.
our things. My answer to the problem is we're going to have to come together and do those things that are, you know, conducive for our community and stuff, and exhibit a positive mental health ourselves. As you indicated, the brother mm-hmm. that killed himself, you know, there's clearly some things that were going on, you know.
Right.
But he didn't have to be a person who was an ex-convict to do it. You got people who are, in fact, the field that you and I, you're an alumni of the police department, a psychologist,
right.
so on and so forth, have the highest rate of domestic violence, alcoholism, suicide, because it's a stressful and sometimes unrewarding, if you find your reward outside of yourself, job and stuff. So yeah, hats off to people who do this. And I do want to throw in, because I know we got time, but you know what I thought was interesting with the substance abuse was that, you know, we were talking about essential workers, right? in this pandemic mm-hmm. that we're having and all that stuff. I thought it was interesting that one of the essential institutions that stayed open was a liquor store.
Right, exactly.
I thought that was real interesting to anesthetize mm-hmm. people and keep them, you know, but it was essential. It was something that was, you know, it didn't get closed, you know. So,
you know,
that's kind
and
of digression, but, you know, still.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, they sure did look at that different because I was working at some of the clubs, and they never shut mm-hmm. down. They never shut down, you know. So they came up with some different criteria that they wanted them to set up if they wanted to increase their numbers, but they pretty much, they stayed open.
You can keep the people sick, you can keep them stupid, and you can keep them drunk, you can control them, correct?
Most definitely. You know, I've had so many people call in, and you know, I'm always talking about, you know, a lot of the police violence, you know, whereas mm-hmm. when we want help and we don't feel that we can get help, if we call the police because we feel that it might be whatever dispute it may be, they show up, somebody might get killed. It's a high right. probability of that when we call them on another family member or somebody else in the neighborhood, and then there may be some retaliation behind that. And so when, you know, so that also plays the mind and how we handle situations and scenarios. And then the other thing is we do things from an individual standpoint. And I was at a meeting, it was a men's meeting on Tuesday morning. Somebody had invited me there. And it was really something. And I guess I want to touch bases on this because there was a guy, it was two white guys, and it was a group of black men, and the white guy that came up, he was from Canada, and he wanted to come and talk to us about race relations. And prior to him even getting up talking, the guy that introduced him was another white male, older guy in his 80s. And I'm not saying their names because I don't remember them. But the one guy lived here, another guy was from Canada, and he wanted to come and share with us how we can correct and move forward, you know, together as a group. And he introduced himself and talked about the programs he had and so forth. And then shortly after he said what he said, then they introduced me. And then I got up and I made reference to, well, we're not the ones that took babies from mothers and used them as crocodile bait while the mothers were out on the field and sometimes not. And I said, you know, and I just went into a whole host of things where you guys could even go to church after you barbecue, you know, a male or female and stuff and cut their body parts and you'd be wearing their ears or something while you're in church. And so I don't want to hear about this. I said, and that's documentation and so forth, but you're always right. talking, we need to get together and so forth. And so there's a lot of confusion when you kind of bring religion in there because that was kind of always used to keep us from fighting back. You know, for everything that's always happened, and we look at the insurrection on January 6th, and, you know, so there's an extreme difference how we're handled and how they're handled, and there's just no way a bunch of black people would have went up there and not been killed.
You'd
know,
have got beat up if you'd have walked across the street in Pennsylvania Avenue. I think one of the things is that the culture of the police department, particularly in Milwaukee, and I can contrast it because after I got out of the military in the 70s, I lived in Detroit, Michigan, and at that time they had their first black mayor, Coleman Young. And what he instituted was it's really what we now call a community policing. They had many stations, you know. Imagine having a station in Pick and Save or something like that. And what basically they did was they put the police officers in the community where they were walking beats, where they interacted with people. Mm-hmm. It wasn't all about just being called and for an emergency or something like that, and that made a big difference. Community policing is very important, and I think in this particular town, when you have the Fire and Police Commission, it's not representative of the people, the diversity of the people, and they don't appear to have. Well, why aren't you and I on the Fire and Police Commission? I'm serious, you know. Mm-hmm. Why don't they pick Dr. Rogers, Dr. McManus,
mm-hmm.
Dr. You know what I'm saying? You know, they seem to pick people who, and they monitor. And if this is the governing body of, you know, then you set a culture, and I'm not beating up on those people. I'm just saying is that, you know, from the top down, you don't necessarily see nothing that's, you know, representative of where we are. You know, I believe that, you know, it has to be a whole revamping. You know, I grew up in this town where Mayor Meyer, Breyer, and Seraphim,
mm-hmm.
you know, and then they ruled the black community with an iron fist.
Right.
You know?
Yep, they did.
You know, and they like Stalin ruled Russia, you know, and black people were, you know, all the way up until now, you know, and you know, and a lot hasn't changed. You know, we have a lot of brothers on the police force. I'm glad to see that, and I'm glad to see that, you know, there's a responsiveness to that. But anytime a man can sleep in a park and get killed, I'm talking about Dante Hamilton,
right? Exactly.
Who was nonviolent. And police can be exonerated for that. That perpetuates the distrust. Okay, you know. So you know, I mean, I don't think a lot of things have changed. You know, I was happy when this, this is not knocking our current chief. I believe he's a good man as well. But the young man who came through, I think his name was Hakeem. He came from Houston, Dallas. He was a candidate, and I was blessed enough to meet with him. And he had a whole different, you know, approach, you know.
Exactly.
Where mm-hmm. police would ride with social workers or people who are community advocates, and it lowered the conflict between police officers and people, because let's face it, a lot of stuff that you're dealing with is mental health issues and stuff, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How many people have been shot because, and then they find out, well, they were schizophrenics and they weren't taking their medication, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you know, I mean, they can't be all things to all people in defense of them as well, you know.
Mm-hmm.
So I think some of the things, that the systemic racism has to be called out, you know. I mean, we're scary cats. We don't talk about the real deals. We have to be more mindful of the fact that, you know, when we talk about violence, we were modeled violence, okay? This is a violent country. I mean, everything that America has taken has been violent. You know, there has been no mm-hmm. compromise. Native Americans were given blankets. And, you know, we know the history. We don't have to go over that. But this is a very violent world we live in.
Right.
And then we mimic that. We're called criminals, you know.
Right.
I don't know. I mean, I just think it's a double standard, and I believe that the some of the race relations and some of the police and community relations are not going to be patched over, and, you know, just because you get somebody that looks like a certain way. People have to change their whole mindset. Our community do not trust police officers, and that's sad, because I know a lot of police officers, to include yourself, at the time you were a cop, you know, who really were in it for the, you know, the heart condition. You really wanted to see people, but you know, when you see that blue or when you see whatever, you know, because of history, okay, people work out a condition, and in history, there's a distrust, you know. They don't. Well, I shouldn't say they don't serve.
Well, you know what?
Protect, but you know, that's the image.
Yeah. Well, you know, I don't think that they're going to really establish the trust, because even when they get people that look like us in those positions, and just like you said, on the Common Council, Police and Fire Commission, all of that, they pretty much get people that they know that they can pretty much control. And so they know what's going to happen. And if they go outside of the box a little too much, then they reel them in or they get rid of them. And so they have to keep that control. And so it comes down to the paper. I mean, people want to make a living. And so we've elected people in these positions, and then we say, okay, well, we can elect them out. You know, it's just like Biden got over the top with the women and the black people's votes. But now all the money that he promised and all the help that he was going to, all of that changed. You know, but people were so gung-ho about this. And so, you know, it's just we've been let down in so many different ways, and it's a continuous cycle. And so when you kind of muster up the will to try and, okay, let's try this, let's do this. And you know, so a lot of people just says, you know what, I'm tired of fighting. You know, it's not going to help. It's not going to this. And then coming from, you know, telling us to put our let's come together. Let's, you know, when you talk about coming together, I was reading something from Elijah Muhammad. They said this is like his 100-year anniversary from something that he said, indicating that he's always said that we need to establish our own community and support our own people without assistance or help from anybody else. And he said, it seems like the only people that have listened to that advice, have taken that advice, would be, he said, the Asians, the Indians, the Jewish people,
everybody except us, if I'm
everybody else with the exception of us, except for the black people. And you know, and there's some truth and then there's some not truth because of the conditions that were laid upon us, because we've had our black Wall Streets and everything, but we just weren't able to protect them and keep them up. And so and then the conversation, you know, whereas to be strong. And so a lot of times we don't ask for help. And I was at, when I was at that meeting, I had spoke with another man, and he had revealed something to me. I had told him that I had took a test for the Milwaukee Police Department. And I failed the first one. I got a 69. And then I took the second one. I got a 68. And he said that he had took a test. And his name, I think Ellis, I think Bayless is the last name. And and he had said to me that the reason why a lot of black people fail is because they try to do everything as an individual. When you're going up against a system of white supremacy, you can't do this thing alone. So they're not alone in how they set up and how they attack us and how they come at us. But yet you go in there and you take this test and you take it alone. And so he elaborated that more by saying that he had took a test for an apprenticeship and failed. He then contacted the Urban League and they gave him the same test and he passed it. And he said the difference from me and him is he went and got that support. He wasn't working as an individual. He understood.
And a lot of those tests are culturally biased too. You know, a lot, most of those tests don't have anything to do with your ability to. SAT does not tell me that you're going to make it through college. You know, I mean, obviously you have to have some basic. Rudimentary knowledge of certain things, but you know, most of those tests are culturally biased, and a lot of those tests have to do with what you've been exposed to, not your intelligence, you know.
Right.
So if you went to a school that they didn't teach English literature, okay, and you're and speaking of trauma, your whole thing was to get from, you know, home and school without either getting beat up or whatever, or however
Right, those things work.
Exactly. You were in environments that didn't necessarily perpetuate what was going to be on those tests, then you're not going to do as well as somebody who was given, you know, the A, the opportunities, and B, kind of set up to, you know, to pass. So, you know, oftentimes those tests are not determinants of, you know, what you're going to be. They're culturally biased in many areas and stuff, you know. And this whole thing about what the Honorable Elijah Muhammad said about doing for self and us working together,
right.
That has been one of the solutions of our problem. You have people, they say, don't quote me on this, but we're somewhere in the fifth or the sixth in our consumer power, gross national product. If we were a country, our gross natural product would be equivalent to our spending, that is, as being consumers,
mm-hmm.
but we don't spend with each other.
Right.
You know,
right.
You got redlining that still goes on with housing.
Right.
You know, so
exactly.
There's a lot of things that just, you know, are detriment to us if we look at the system to be the answer, because the system is not designed. So many people that you alluded to are there for system maintenance. You know, doesn't
right.
make any difference what your color is, what is your mindset, because there's white people
mm-hmm.
who are just as heartfelt, believe it or not, than we are in terms of our situation. It's not always that. So we've been blinded by that, too. They'll go get one of us, you know. You know what Malcolm said about the house Negro and the field Negro. You
right.
know what I'm saying?
Right.
We sick boss, you know. They generally get people with that mind. They get people with that mindset, and they continually perpetuate what has been going on, you know, for ages and ages. We have to fall all the way in love with ourselves. We're going to have to recognize who we are through our history, through reinforce and positive reinforcement and stuff, you know, the narrative that we're talking about, you know, all the good things that we notice going on in the community. The brain is stimulated when you see the dopamine in your brain gets, you know, just excited
right.
about good stuff. All we hear about is bad stuff. Turn on the media.
Mm-hmm.
I ain't talking about just social media. I learned more about black history and social media than I did in school. Isn't that ironic?
Oh, exactly.
My point is,
exactly.
when I look at the media, why is it the north side seems to be the only place that crime is reported on? There's no way in the world
right.
you can tell me north of the Viaduct that all the crime is going on. You know, I mean, you know,
and you
that's
know
all
what?
We hear
I worked,
all day.
Right, and I worked in the suburbs for, you know, almost 30 years, and crazy stuff happened all the time, but it
mm-hmm.
wasn't on the news. They picked and choose. You know, if it was something really, really extreme that they, you know, they had to put out there, then it went. Outside of that, you didn't hear about it.
They vilified
and,
their,
you know, but
their medium.
And the same kind of situations happened in Milwaukee, you'd hear about it. You know, or if the kids happened to be from Milwaukee and they were up here and did something, then they talk about it. You know, so, you know, it reminds me of something I'm going to read this. I've got some of his book, Brother Nuri Muhammad, when he was here in Milwaukee at the mosque. And but I read something that he had from a lecture he gave, and I'm just going to read this. And I'm reading this in the sense that he's talking about, you know, why we do the things that we do, you know, the conditions
mm-hmm.
that we've had. So I'm just going to read this quick. You don't kidnap human beings. That's how you treat animals. You don't put human beings into shackles. That's what you do to animals. You don't beat them
mm-hmm.
and burn them at the stake. That's how you treat animals. You don't put human beings on auction blocks. That's what you do to animals. You don't beat human beings with whips. That's what you do with animals. So the goal of the slave master was to treat us less than what we were until we actually believed that we were there.
Yep.
It's a scientific fact. It's a scientific fact that if I can put it in your mind in the form of a thought, then all the thoughts will become words, and all the words will become action, and all actions will become habits, and all habits will form your character, and your character
mm-hmm.
dictates your destiny or your future. So if you have the wrong original thought in your mind, the future doesn't look too good. And that's Brother Nuri Muhammad. And so when you made the comment, you know, the science of it, and if you hear something, and if you hear this over and over, I mean, they have conditioned us. And, you know, and Malcolm X said basically the same thing. They no longer have to have us in chains because they have conditioned our minds. You know, they don't have to whip us anymore. They don't have to beat us anymore. They don't have to chain us, rape us, torture us. They don't have to do it because we have learned from them to do it to ourselves.
And as so a man thinketh in his heart, so he is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. And so I want to ask you, you know, when we hear so many different people talk about things, and I know there's been a, and I don't know if you could mind elaborating on some of the situations with the church now. There was a money issue where they had to pay things back, and how do you feel, you know, as far as the church getting involved in the community? Is it different now than it was in the 60s, or you know, are they quiet? Are they, I mean, what are they allowed to do? Is there a guideline, a restriction, or is that just a personality of whoever is running the church, or is it some government restrictions on some of these institutions?
Well, it's funny you say that because there are, if you choose to be a 501c, you're not supposed to, and it's a violation to make political endorsements, you know. What I find interesting, a lot of people do that. A lot of ministers do endorse, you know, political people and, you know, overtly and covertly and stuff. And what has happened now with the money being taken back? And, I'm very withdrawn about commenting on that because I don't have the full knowledge of what I've been told and what I've heard. Is that the I'm a pastor, as you know, and we don't own our property, so we don't have the whole thing about property taxes and things of that nature, and so they're taxing churches and they're taxing parts of the church. You know, I guess that the city deems as being a prophet or whatever, you know. And I don't know how this is. Like I said, I really don't like to articulate on things that I don't really have a full knowledge of, but they are doing it. I do know, in fact, that, you know, some people have received or some churches have received bills, and hefty bills, $10,000, $20,000. I always caution that faith-based mess anyway, you know. We had a president who was dropping bombs on people and called himself a faith-based president, you know, and doling money to, you know, various organizations, and people were, of course, you know, taking it. And whoever feeds you tend to be able to control you, you know. That's kind of separate from them taxing the church. And, you know, again, supposedly on the flip side of that, I'm not speaking on authority, I'm just talking about what I've heard. You know, I haven't really investigated it to the degree that I can take a stance like that. I think it's wrong if that's what's going on, but supposedly they're doing this because of they're trying to, you know, gain dollars. But these same people were invited in pulpits. The same people that, you know, they're protesting now was invited in pulpits, and they were massacred to me, you know what I'm saying? You know, they were the man, you know. Mm-hmm. But now all of a sudden, you know, I think if we keep it clean and stay like we did, or you were speaking of churches in the past, we used to take care of our own again, you know.
Yes.
We used to, you know, our funds. In fact, the church did serve as a social service center. The church did serve as a place where we received, and it still does, don't get me wrong, I don't want to suggest that it doesn't, but I think it minimizes when, you know, the Bible talks about Satan will never divide Satan, okay? We always think the house that is divided will not stand. We think about, you know, our unification, but no, you know, when you jump into bed with these people and stuff, whatever they do, you know, I wasn't surprised. Not at all. Like I said, but these are the same people that was rooting for these people and inviting them to dinners and honoring them in their pulpits and all the other crazy stuff, you know. So, and we should give honor where honor is due. But I think this thing got way out of proportion. We became integrated in a wrong sense and had an expectation of politics or politicians to be, you know, not doing what they're doing now, you know. And but it's evident that they're doing it, and, you know, I believe it's wrong, but I think it, the solution is to have a moratorium for all of us to sit down and just say what is it that is needed and what can we do to correct this, you know. Protesting them is not going to help more so than voting them out is going to help. Recalls and things of that nature. But it has taken a whole different turn because we've integrated in their system. You know what I'm saying? And
yeah.
When you integrate in the mindset, it was already demonic. You know, and I don't mean that in a negative way. I mean everything has boundaries and stuff. You know, and they're wrong for doing that. But you know, they're wrong. They've been wrong. You know what I'm saying? You know. I wish we could get that upset and unified about other things besides them taking money from us, you know.
Right.
When all the things that you just outlined, all the atrocities and things that we, you know, that we suffer, we don't come together about that like we do about money, you know. But it's
right.
I mean, I think taxation for the churches that have been, you know, or spiritual entities supposedly is not supposed to happen, but you know, it is happening. And hey, you know, it shows you who your true friends are, you know. And I know I'm not,
right.
not taking a stance, and it seems like I'm on the fence with this because I am, because I don't like speaking on things that I don't have all the facts, you know. But I do know the fact that they are in fact doing it, you know.
And I most definitely appreciate that. I certainly wouldn't want you to, you know, I mean, I know you wouldn't and everything. So I really appreciate the honesty, and that's what I expect. I'm just wondering, and we can elaborate that more, but do you think that, you know, people understanding, you know, from a spiritual point of view, you know, are we getting away, moving too far away from the church? I mean, the influence of the media and all of these different social issues and stuff. I mean, people are more excited about learning how to get on TikTok, and, you know, because one of the illusions that people, they could get on YouTube, make a video, do something, I got a million hits, and all of a sudden I'm famous, I got money. And so they're moving away from doing some of the things that, you know, the hard work to really make a life earning where they can, a wage where they can raise a family, so forth, take care of themselves. And they're trying to do this quick fix thing, you know, get, you know, make $1 million, singing a song, rapping, or
right.
It's just so many different things going on through social media.
I think that one of, you know, and in that sense, yeah, I think that, you know, because the more, I know that the moral fiber that we had was through our spirituality, whether it was the church, the hall, the mosque, because we are a spiritual people.
Right.
You know, and if your spirituality does nothing else, it should give you a moral fiber to say, hey, man, this is my brother, this is a human being, and I'm not going to do that. We become bankrupt in that area because it's idolatry.
Yeah.
We worship money. We worship sex. We worship everything outside of the true and living God for whatever that means to you, and I'm doing that with an appreciation. I know that maybe even the listening audience or in our community, we may have Muslims, we may have Jews, we have Kemetics, we may have Christians, you know, and you know, these are all rooted from Africa, okay, you know.
Mm-hmm.
All the major religions that we call as major religions came out of Africa, but they were bastardized.
I'm going to ask you to hold on to that thought until we come back from our break. We're getting ready. We're at the top of the hour. We're going to go to a break,
sure.
And then we'll come back, and I would just like you to continue. So we're getting ready to go to a break, our first break, and here we go.
System that would not like to see black males and black females together. They would not like to see that happening at all, because once we come together, they understand the power of the strength of the black woman, the queen of the universe. They know that, her strength. They also know They also know the power of the black male, the warrior. If you would turn him loose, he will protect also his family and things that need to be done. And because they understand that if our relationships are together, then they will lose. But if our relationships are torn up, then we can forever be treated in certain ways by the oppressors. That's why they gave us something called integration, which is nothing but the illusion of inclusion. They gave us this. They actually gave the statement. And when they gave that statement, it meant that they could go right into your homes. They went into the black homes now, the powers that be, and told us that you cannot discipline your children anymore. And if you discipline your children, you were going to jail. It's this kind of thing they told us. Now, this is amazing that, you know, the black parents who in Africa, that was out of the question. Some social worker come in there saying you can't discipline your children, the social worker would disappear. As you all know, this kind of thing would go on. You would be sitting in a place like this, and all you had to do was act up and do something wrong, and all your mother had to do was to glance in your direction. Y'all remember that? But then it got so terrible and frightening us. This is why we got to take this back, and this is the best part of our action plan, is to reclaim the minds of our children, because then they went into the public schools and took discipline out of there. So when we acted up in there, they put our boys, our black men, into something called special ed classes. Those special ed classes are nothing but holding cells until they can go to the state prison. But this is what they did. And then, the one thing that they knew, that if we can put them in prison, if we can have them convicted for a felony, then once they get out of prison, they cannot get a job because of that. They cannot get the job. And then if they happen to eke out and find a job, then they have to pay taxes on a job, yet they cannot vote. And I call that taxation without representation. That's what we're looking at. And if one of the things that we would learn to do, they did a grand thing when they took that discipline away from us, because when they made our parents afraid to discipline the children, then what happened? We found out that the teachers were afraid of the principals were scared of the superintendents, superintendent was scared of the school board was scared of the parents were scared of the children, and the children ain't scared of nobody.
Listening to Warriors Way Radio, where their motto is continuing the fight. Your host is Brother Kwasi Kraft. Warriors Way Radio is an affiliate of the Sankofa Historical Society. which is a part of the Black Reality Think Tank. And they are operating on the Blog Talk Radio Network. Check them out. Email them at warriorsway101@gmail.com. All of our programs are archived. Just go to www.blogtalkradio.com. Go to the search portal. Put in the Sankofa Historical Society and check out any of our programs that are there. They air every Thursday evening at 6 o'clock. Warriors Way Radio. Continuing the fight.
Hotep family, we are back. We have our brother Mark Fossey here with us, and I also see some callers on the line, so I'm just going to go to the line and see if I have any callers, any questions, comments, or just listening. I'm going to go with 9139, 9139, caller, questions, comments, or are you just listening? 9139. Okay, maybe just listening. Okay, I'm going to go to 2364. 2364, caller, questions or comments, or are you just listening?
Peace, brothers. This is Tony Courtney. Just listening at this dynamic, informed dialogue that's going on, and I'm sure that people that's on listening is getting their minds blown and getting updated in terms of what's actually going on. You know, our people are becoming more and more awakened, and what you brothers are doing in terms of having them to take a look at comparing how they think along with what it is you're saying is what's making the changes in our community as our community is becoming more and more awakened.
That's right. Yeah.
So I just want to go ahead and keep on listening. If I got any comments, shall I make them a little later on? Doing a great job.
All right. Thank you. Thank you. Much. Thank I you, appreciate
Gordon.
It.
Dear you.
Okay. You know what, well, we just before we came back, we went to the break, we were listening to Dr. Julia Hare, and she was just talking about the whole system in which how mm-hmm. we come up, our kids and the socialization process, and they have taken so much power out of our hands. And she made the point where the teachers are afraid of the principals. Principals afraid of the administration, and the kids, you know, they're not afraid of anybody, and that's what we're dealing. And that's so much of what we're dealing with right now. And you're wondering why the kids are running wild, and you know this has been socially engineered, and we don't run into those same problems in so many of these other places where kids can identify themselves of something of greatness. I've not heard so much about the wealth of the black people and the black experience until I got into my 30s.
Yeah.
I heard things here and there, but I did not research it like that in my younger days. And that's on me. But I was just not moved to that because a lot of people, even in my family, I didn't, you know, they didn't express that type of attitude and energy and effort because they were looking more towards the things that we were taught out of the school books. You know, I remember as a little kid, I wanted to be like George Washington. I wanted to chop down the cherry tree, you know. Later on, I read about him being one of the worst slave masters. And later on, when he before he passed away, he felt that he probably shouldn't have slaves. But then, you know, the slaves were passed on to his wife, Martha, and she wasn't too happy about that because she felt they were going to try to poison her and so forth. So she pretty much, you know, just didn't keep the slaves because she didn't want to pay for the upkeep. You know, but we learn so many of these different things, but we come up to worship our oppressors, you know, and that's a different mindset from when we look at people that that don't look like us and how they come up, you know, and just it's a different attitude altogether, you know. It's a different mindset, and that means so much in your connection with yourself and your surrounding and with your people. And so, Mark, if you could just continue to elaborate on, you know, what we were talking about in regards to the godly aspect of things, and if you wanted to also comment on what Dr. Julia Hare was saying as well. I know you heard some of that.
Oh, yeah. Every time I hear, I get excited because it's the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
Yeah.
You know, but I want to, if I may, we can go back to her, but what you just said was very profound. Within a lifetime, I can remember there was a time when African Americans were moving towards what you're talking about. The whole ideal of Kwanzaa actually came out of, you know, the Black Power movement. When the riots, as they call them, occurred in the 60s, and Black people were coming to a consciousness. You had organizations like Black People's Topographical Research Center. You had the Black Panther Party. We had, you know, I mean, on and on and on. You could just, you know, even the church, this whole onset of Black theology, and, you know, obviously, Honorable Marcus Garvey, Honorable Noble Drew Ali, Honorable Elijah Muhammad. I mean, there was a time when we were trying to manifest and come back to ourselves, but of course, you know, that had to be stopped. So in the 60s, Hoover and his crew, FBI and CIA and all those people came into play, and this is around about the Vietnam era. Drugs were, you know, that whole thing about Frank Lucas and the Gangster
right.
Chronicles or whatever. That is true, but it's true because
right.
that was brought in, so it destroyed our community. I mean, we were on the move. We were on the rise. I mean, you had,
right.
Even in this town, you had things like, you know, Black schools being, you know, not invented, but, you know, we had People's Committee for Survival, like I said, Black People's Topographical Research Center. You have a lot of cultural things that was going on, and we were going back into ourselves from a positive standpoint, but that had to be crushed, okay, and they did it. You know, they did it through drugs.
Right.
They did it through what the sister was talking about, you know, the welfare system. They did it through that's not our 40 acres and a mule, no welfare. Okay. What's our 40 acres and a mule is us having land and doing for ourselves, you know, and businesses and things of that nature and stuff, and having a mindset to, you know. And see, doing for ourselves don't mean we discriminate against other people. It means that we
right.
love ourselves so much that we would help, you know, one another. Everybody else does that. They don't have a problem with it. When we talk about doing, we're talking about your hatred,
right.
your separatist. No.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so you have this mindset that you have now. So when you can break down the family, you can destroy a group of people. And it's the same thing that we have experienced. Excuse me, now the children have run amok. You know, we've allowed other people to tell us how to raise our children. And we bought into it, you know. And, you know, this whole thing about corporal punishment, I think, is overplayed. Yeah, you may have got your butt spanked or whooped, but you also was fed. You were also given, you know, spirituality. You were also, you know what I'm saying? I mean, it wasn't as, you know, like you were being beat down like a runaway slave or nothing like that. Boundaries and discipline is important for a child. A child needs structure. And when they don't have structure, you have what you have now. And it's, like you said before, it's socially engineered. It's not a a haphazard thing. You know, we were very disciplined in terms of our family systems and stuff and how we treated elderly. You know, I don't care how bad you were when I was growing
right.
up. You didn't mistreat nobody's mother. You didn't mistreat your own mother. You certainly didn't mistreat no elderly people, you know. But now everything is ran amok, you know, because of those dynamics that the sister pointed out
yeah.
and what you just stated, you know. So we're going to have to grab our families again and get a hold to it. That's why, again, you know, I'm harping on this because there are good things going on in our community, which in the essence
oh, yeah.
part of
most
this whole thing about, I'm not talking about them in their sense of itself, but this coalition we have about pulling together for a drug-free community in the Harambe area is to help with the reduction and prevention of substance abuse of our
right.
youth, you know. And there are people working with our youth. We are doing, you know, a lot of good work, you know. But that's the we talk about the problem a lot, but the solution is for us to do it, you know, and to garner
right.
with people that's going to help us. There's no reason why we don't have in our community what they have on the south side with UCC, where the Hispanics have come together. They have residential
right.
treatment daycares. They have, you know, all type of things that they do for their community, and they're not racist.
Mm-hmm.
They're looking out for their community. We got to do the same
right,
thing.
Right, right. And, you know, I happen to be on the south side, so I see that because I also teach as a volunteer. I've been volunteering over at COSI for about probably the last 30 years.
Mm-hmm.
And where I'm teaching martial arts and other community awareness and safety issues. And so I have basically a free pass to go there and, you know, my family, whatever. I also do it at the King Center. But I notice at the King Center, you know, it's structured different in regards to the openness to the community and so forth and how they do things. And it's actually different from place to place. I mean, because you have these county facilities, but when you have the county facilities and some of them that are stretched out, we're in a white neighborhood. Those
mm-hmm.
are run different than the ones that are in the Hispanic or in the predominantly black neighborhoods. And I was talking with some of the workers there in regards to how they were running the programs, the assistance that they were giving, and they, you know, is, you know, they're fortunate that they have some good people that live in that community that are concerned, and they do a lot of the work, you know, as far as some of these other places where they're bringing people in, and you know, it's just a different scenario and situation, because it's not from within that community, it's from the outside, and they're basically, so it's putting a mindset that you can't do it on your own. We have to bring people in from the outside because we're just not capable enough, and we don't have capable
right.
people, and so we just try to change that dynamic, and that's one of the reasons I live out in the suburbs, and I do a lot of stuff in the community. In the inner city, because that's where I grew up. And sometimes I'm thinking, man, I want to sell my house so I can move there so I can, you know, because I can't even vote for a lot of the people there and stuff like that. And it's like, well, you really shouldn't say anything, you know, because you're not a voter. But no, I have friends, I have family, you know, I count, my people count. And so I don't let nobody disregard me just because of where I live and so forth. My concern and my effort and what I'm trying to do for people, you know, that's where I'm at. But I wanted to also have you talk a little bit. When we talk about, I hear so many times, and I'm sure you know, Brother Cujo, Charles Robinson. And
yeah,
he talks a lot about the trauma that's passed down. And
mm-hmm.
You hear that so much, but there's also, and, you know, we were talking with Doc Rogers, and somebody had mentioned it, and we were talking about it, and there was a conversation where healing is also passed down as well.
That's right. That's right.
You know, but when we
focus,
but so when you talk about the resilience and everything that we go through, and one of the things that I was talking about, because people talk about, man, black people, man, look at them. They always party and they always, you know what, through all the atrocity and trauma that we go through, we always found a way come together, to get together and laugh and, you know, eat and just enjoy each other's company and engage in a way. And it was so beautiful. And you saw that so much back when, you know, with a lot of Tyler Perry's movies where he would show picnics and, you know, sitting at the table on Sundays and, you know, the get-togethers. And so, I mean, but that's how we grew up.
And that's who we were. I always tell this story because I'm not originally from Milwaukee. I'm from Southern Illinois, which is, you know,
my condolences.
You know, Cairo, Illinois, Metropolis, Illinois. So that's all right. Those are good people from down there. But when I came here, you know, being born in the 50s, coming here, basically what you had was black people taking that culture of helping one another, that culture of, you know, spirituality, that culture of, you know, being together and putting it into the red line districts of what we used to call many years ago the reservations, the ghettos, the hoods. But we were together, okay? And I remember once being lost. This is real weird, you know. I know it sounds funny, but I was from 15th and Center to Titonia in Locust. I lost my way. I was a kid, you know. And watch where I'm going with this, because what has just happened recently brought me back to that from a pleasant standpoint. We always think about the trauma. And I was living with my aunt, and my cousin stayed on 15th and Center. You know, mind you, I'm not from here. To me, this is the big city, but I got lost.
Right.
And it was a Sunday, and it was a lady, and she was a car full of girls and stuff. Presumably, they were her daughters. And it was evident that I was lost, you know. And she, today when a child is lost, we're scared, right? Because, you know, somebody's going to abduct them. She asked me what was wrong, where was I at. I remember the fire station as on Titonia and Locust as a landmark, you know. And she took me there, and she told my aunt, this always resonates in my mind how we were. She said, you know, and they exchanged, you know, pleasantries. Apparently they had just got out of church and stuff. And she said, you know, we got to look out for each other up here. And that just, you know, and man, that was healing.
Wow.
As I think about how we were back in the day, man, as we say, you know. Somebody didn't have some sugar, somebody give you some sugar. Somebody didn't have some milk, somebody would give you some milk. I must be a non-biological family member of about five families in the city because that's how we were, you know.
You know, I remember so many times. Yeah. And I remember so many times going next door to get a cup of sugar. You know,
and it wasn't like he was begging or anything like that.
It's just what everybody did.
Or the lock key syndrome, as they call it, you know. My daycare center was Levarne Way Boys Club, where I would go after school because my folks worked, you know. And, you know, we were working people, so, you know, I'd stay there, play bumper pool, you know, whatever we did, you know, and then went home. You know what I'm saying? You know, we took care of one another. You know, and it was an innate ability that we brought from Africa, from the South, from the resilience of being oppressed. But you know, something about when you get too much food to eat, and something about when you think you've landed, you forget your roots and stuff. And that's not all just us, you know. I mean, I think it's been planted there. You know, again, when we lost our way in terms of who God really was. And began to worship other gods. Look, we went to the left, we went to the right, and here we are, man. But we have, in my lifetime, 67, 66 years of living, I've seen it turn full circle. And, you know, the masses who are the majority of black people have the answer to our problems, okay? Not the people who went to college, not to say I went to college. Lord, did I go to college? But I'm talking about the people who are the how would I say the true brains and the guidance of how our people are going to flow is going to be the masses, the very people that we look at and sometimes look to help. Or helping one another in a way that we don't even see, you know. As much as we detest rap music. Rap music is the inner soul of how these young people are hurting.
Thank
man.
You. Thank you.
They're hurting. You know what I'm saying? You know.
Mm-hmm.
We went from listening to My Girl to My Bitch. I hope I can say that on this. Said it already.
Right,
you know what I'm saying?
And
this is our mindset. You know, we went from calling ourselves one thing to the other. You know, because as a man thinketh in his heart, so he, as a man thinketh so in his heart, he is and stuff. And we have become what we're not through programming, through condition, and it's our responsibility, those of us who are enlightened, to bring forth our history, to bring forth you can do it, and not listen to the narrative that has been given to us, because when you listen to that, it's designed to keep you oppressed. Oppressed how? That you can't do it, that you can't make it, that you don't even have a history that even suggests that you have made it and stuff. Thinking about what you were saying, maybe they gave us the worst animal in the world to eat, chitlins.
Yeah.
Destroyed our bodies with that mess.
Mm-hmm.
We made it out of a delicatessen. They gave us the most depreciated areas to live. We brought it up. Okay,
yeah.
You know what I'm saying? You know, that's resilience, man. You know, weren't afforded medicine from a standpoint, you know. But thank God we still have people like Dr. Carter, and we still have people who understands herbs. We got to go back to our roots.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we got to go back to, you know, what we know to do, gardening. We got to go back, stop eating processed food, you know, as much as we do, and go back to what we know to do, you know. We got to go back to saying yes, sir, and no, ma'am, to our mothers and fathers.
Exactly.
Teaching that to our sons, you know.
Mm-hmm.
That you don't talk to girls like that. You don't treat women like that, you know. We were taught that, man.
Yeah,
and that's
definitely
cultural. You know, that's cultural,
it is. Right.
Mm-hmm.
Go ahead.
No.
I was just going to say, you know, when we look at all the trauma that's going on in the city, with people just not understanding how to have a relationship, how to engage with a woman, with brothers and sisters and so forth, and then we're getting instructions from the people that created the problems from us, for the most part. They're telling us not to listen to each other, to be afraid of each other, you know, and that's what you got going on. As a matter of fact, I go to a senior center tomorrow, and I've been teaching personal safety. And the seniors there, they're worried because, you know, they went out in the parking lot and people were out there shooting, and what do we do and so forth, and how do we handle these situations? And I tell them, and I told them, I said, one of the things that we have to do is we have to bring these young people that you're afraid of, that the shooting and doing these things, they have to know that who you are, because it was a time when they weren't who they are, and you were protecting and looking out after them because they couldn't take care of themselves.
That's
and
right.
Now you're at the point where you need their assistance, and they need to know that it's your turn now. You need to be looking out after me. So we shouldn't have this fear of each other, but we have to have that engagement where we start talking to each other and we can make these things happen. So that's one of the things that I'm trying to incorporate down there at the senior center, so that we can, I'm gonna work these things, but so I'm gonna do these protective skills and scenarios and situations, but I want them to work it together so that they look to protecting their grandparents, their great uncles, and so forth, and this and that, where they're not showing that disrespect. You know, we have to bring that, bring them back in that circle and stuff like that, because, you know, I listen to, you know, Doc Rogers, Dr. Bridges, Brother Timothy, Brother Lush, I mean, Sister Benicia, Sister Dee Dee, Queen Mother, Dr. Jane. I could just go on and on. We got so many people that do so many good things, but everybody has that core background and upbringing and stuff, and who am I talking about? Dr. McManus. And, I mean, we just have a wealth of people with so much intelligence and have just been through so much and can give us so much guidance. And a lot of these young people, you know, they're not reaching out to these people because, you know, they're lost. and the reason they're lost is because they don't know who they are. And they're making sure we don't know who we are because of the teaching that they're not getting. And they're fighting like crazy about telling the truth, and that's what critical race theory is all about.
And I think that, you know, you model what who you are.
Mm-hmm.
When our church was on 24th and Hopkins, we were housed in a church that was there. One of the instructions of the pastor I gave the people, when you get in your car, you don't be running into your car and so on and so forth. You engage with people in the community. You say hello.
Right.
You speak to people. You know, because basically we're in their community. Most of the people didn't live there. We practiced that. Man, we didn't have cars broken into. The brothers, it was a gang across, literally a gang, selling dope. My office was where, you know, about 5 minutes from the church. I would drive. I said, come on, man. I told y'all came not sell dope in front of the church. All rev, you know. I said, man, that ain't a way to make a living, but you can't sell dope in front of the church. We talked about various things like sport. In other words, I engaged with them, okay? And in that engagement, there was 1 year where they were going to. See, I'm not saying I could stop the crime, but I could say that they engaged enough with us and said, Rev, y'all shouldn't have no night service because there might be some drama tonight. That's a lot of respect.
Right.
You know
right,
what I'm saying?
Exactly.
And I appreciated that. Well, it wasn't because I prayed and we prayed and there was no drama. But my point is we engaged ourselves with the community.
Exactly.
That surrounded us because if you were really going to do the work of Jesus, he reached out to people and outreach to people, not just in theory, but in practice. You know, and we're going to have to do that. The reason why we weren't afraid of the grown men in our community because, first of all, they reached out to us. And there were boundaries, and we knew that, you know, knew better than that. But, you know, they showed us, you know, generosity by speaking, but having that, you know, how would I say? I'll use boundaries. I'm kind of being redundant. But, you know, show people respect and love. We had no problems with them. In fact, one boy gave me his gun once. You know, I'm talking very anonymous now because – because you know, and that's not me. It was me having to develop a relationship with them.
Exactly.
That you know, right? You know what I'm saying? So don't tell me it can't be done because I've lived it.
Right.
I've seen it happen. You know, where if you treat people the way they should be treated and give them like the brother was saying about the animalistic piece. You treat people like animals, they're gonna act like animals.
Exactly.
You treat people with love and kindness, that draws people. And it's not that hard if you care for your people.
You know, that's so beautiful because we need to reach people because, you know, like the theme of the conversation was suffering and silence. You know, we get so many people where we don't approach them. They're taught that, you know, you deal with your problems yourself. This is what I did. Maybe your dad or somebody else tell you this is what I did. And, you know, we, you know, it's like I know when I was a kid, I had got lost. I think I was maybe 11 years old, 10 or I think it was 10 or 11 years old, 11 at the oldest. But I got lost, and I was, oh, man, I was probably near Silver Spring. But I lived on 16th and Cass. And I'm walking all over, and I'm trying to, and I finally got home, and some people looked at me, and just like you said, you know, it was, I just ran into some good people because I know it was people that took advantage of people because we've always get those situations. But when you ran into people that looked like us and we looked like we were in some type of distress, they saw some little kid out here in this white neighborhood and he was black just like them, they knew something wasn't right. They like, excuse me. Can I help you? Are you lost? And I was
trying
to get back. Boom, it happened because they knew, you know, and you know, it was just a difference. But social media, the law and how they tell us how we need to engage with people, you know, we can't talk to them this way. And if you see this, call the police. And then we don't know what's going to happen when the police show up when they deal with a black and brown person. But again, that creates, and that's another anxiety into itself. And so, you know, we've always been, like you said, resilient, found a way, you know, just like, you know, they didn't start the Food Lust program. We did with the Black Panthers and stuff into the school.
That's right.
And medical stuff. And
free medicine.
They saw,
did that with the Black Panther Party.
Right.
And the thing
that they don't want to show that we could, we as men and as a community could take care of our own people. And they had to shut that
That's
down
right.
because they can't, they had to continuously humanize and demean the efforts of the Black people. No matter what we did, they had to shut it down, break it down, and say, no, you guys can't do it unless you get our approval. And so you got right now, everybody wants to do something if they get a grant. I said, you don't need a grant. You just need to go out there and do it.
That's right.
But a lot of us don't want to do it because, you know, we've been brought up in this European way. It's about dollars and cents. So if I ain't making money, then I ain't doing it. And, you know, and you know, and our African concept is, you know, people over money all day long. But that's not how we came up. So I understand people's attitude, but I'm just saying when we think with that African mind, we can't think what we don't know. And they're making sure that we don't know. So we really have to study and research things. And I'm so glad that, you know, you brought so much of that up, you know, because, I mean, that is most definitely important and stuff like that. So continue, please.
Thank you, brother. Thank you. And, you know, we're all in our – and I think that the other thing we need to accentuate that in our spheres, wherever we are, we have an influence wherever we are. You know, sometimes mm-hmm. we want to bite the whole thing off. But, you know, if it's a five-block radius, you have
right.
a dominion in that particular – if we all did that and thought, you know, had a like-mindedness, just think how powerful we could be, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And not being pitted against one another for dollars and cents or, you know, fighting over money and, you know, who got the best proposal, because that's all subjective anyway.
Right.
If they decide they don't love you this year, you ain't going to get the money, okay? Trust me, I know.
Mm-hmm.
That's another story.
Yeah. But, and, you know, one of the other things that I was looking at doing, and one of the things that I've already done, I've quit buying stuff from, you know, like I used to have a charge card. Well, Boston store is done. I still got one at Macy's, mm-hmm. but I don't buy anything from there. And I don't.
Okay.
And so what I try to do is I just try to buy Black. And it's hard to do because we don't have a lot of places that, you know, have a lot of the things that we need. But I'm trying to, for myself as an individual, build these Black stores and stuff. And so I go out to Brother Earl's, you know, personality.
Mm-hmm.
And then I try and get my food, you know, Zakiya Courtney, she, you know, and so many other people. My nephew, Paul, he has he's a chef, and I don't know what, if it's a name for it, but Unfit to Be Slave, he has that clothing line, but he also does the vegan food, and so I try to get things from him. But we, you know, we just have to go so far to get it. We just don't have a centralized place where it's open every day. A lot of these people, businesses, they don't just have a location. You know,
that's what I learned about Detroit. You know, it was that when I lived there, coming from here, it was just, you know, you like it in Detroit, man, that crazy place, man. I mean, Black folks is running stuff. You hear me?
Wow.
Mayor Young,
yeah.
Chief Hart. You know, I mean, everywhere I looked, I didn't see Breyer. I saw Chief Hart. I didn't see Meyer.
Right.
I saw Coleman Young. And that does something to one's esteem. There was Black business and entrepreneurs for years. You know what I'm saying? This wasn't just something new. And people did invest in one another there. You know, again, you have to cultivate that culture a little. It's probably one of the things that we need to be looking at. So when we go to school, we don't go to school to work for someone else. We go to school to be entrepreneurs for ourselves.
Right.
I was told, you get a good education, you'll get a good job. Get a good education and then provide for your community, you know. Mm-hmm. So,
And you know, I think I got kind of caught up in that, whereas, you know, you go through what they want you to go through. And mm-hmm. and so many times for everybody that I've talked to that have been through things, Doc Rogers, Baba Courtney, Brother Alfonso, Kwaku, and yourself. I mean, everybody has talked that they had to re-educate themselves because it's a state of social engineering that they try to get you to think a certain way based on their point of view. And their point of view isn't in our best interest. We learn that because we're woke now, but in the beginning, you know, we're taking in this information. And so you're going to get some good and bad with that. But we know we understand it, and we can sort that out a lot better now. Thinking with our African minds.
What we have to do, though, not only with our African minds, but we have to build the institutions like you and Dr. Rogers are doing and Alfonso mm-hmm. did and Queen Mother with Sankofa, what mm-hmm. the comedics are doing. What people are doing, institutions, that then we can be, how would I say, in other words, there's a black brain drain from Milwaukee because there's nowhere for us to do anything in our community. Right. Some people were going to Atlanta in my era of time when they were growing mm-hmm. up because there were people that looked like them. There was cultural congruency and so on and so forth. So we have to be in a position now to take that same information and make sure that we build our own institutions, you know, our own businesses, and then support those businesses. I'm not really just talking about retail. You know, I'll be selfish for a minute, you know. Why would you go to a clinic that don't understand you, but you wouldn't come to a clinic that understands you, my clinic, you know, in your community, okay? Mm-hmm. You're going to go way out somewhere, you know, where they don't, you know. And it's not that they hate you. They just don't know you.
Exactly.
You know what I'm saying?
Exactly.
They don't get their hair cut in your area. You know, they're trying to get up out of there as quick as possible because they're there to make money, not to be an investment. You know what I'm saying? They don't worship there. They don't. You know what I'm saying? You know. So, so we have to be, as you talked about, my brother, we educate ourselves that, you know, black is beautiful, black is smart, mm-hmm. black is, you know, prosperous, black is resilient. You know,
right.
And begin to invest in our own selves.
Right. You know, my wife, she did something where she, you know, she was looking to get a friend some help and to see, you know, a psychiatrist and so forth. And she was helping out a friend. And she found this location, and, you know, it was on North Avenue, right in the hood, in the center of the hood and stuff like that. Mm-hmm. And the office is upstairs from a daycare, and they rent a little space there. But there's a lot of other community people that also rent a space there, you know. Mm-hmm. It's not like in some high-rise building, but it's in the black community. And it's a black therapist that's in there that, you know, that can relate to the people in the community, and it's just like what you said. But one of the things that a lot of us, you know, we get to looking at what it looks like on TV and some of these people that are a little more well off and you know, and we think ours need to look like theirs, you know, or at least needs to look like that. I mean, you know, we get to mesmerize the makeup. You know, versus,
well, many of them
quality,
are steered,
you know,
too. You know, I got to be honest. You know, the marketing and the steering and
mm-hmm.
all that
yeah.
other stuff. You know, their ice is colder. That syndrome, and mm-hmm. oftentimes even funding sources do that. You know, they
right.
So if they don't want to do an RFP, request for proposal where it's a fair market, they'll do a pilot program. Whenever you hear that, that means white folks gave somebody some money that they want somebody else to have. I'm just keeping it real. Yeah, you know.
Yeah.
And then
yeah.
pilot programs, they'd be giving away money. You hear me? But they give it to who they want to give it to because, you know, this is just something we're trying to experiment on. What
right.
have we been experimenting on, you know? So all the games that are played and stuff that, you know, that disadvantaged us in those areas. But then that's our fault because we got to look out for one another, man. Ain't nobody going to look out for you better than you going to look out for yourself.
Right.
You know, you got to love self first, you know. If the Bible can tell
you
to love your neighbors, you love yourself. If you don't love yourself, that kind of loving I can do without, you know. So,
but you know,
we have
Sandy, what you were just saying, you know, in regards to how they kind of set you up with those situations and kind of experiment with you in your situation, whereas you're actually thinking that you're doing something of your own skill set and everything, and they like you for this and that, but you're just a project for them. You know, and
you say something they don't like, you know.
Right, right.
Then you become a problem, you know. I was all right until I spoke out on the opiate money that came in the state and the county, and our people didn't see it.
Right,
you know,
right.
All of a sudden, people from the suburbs start getting help, you know, the priority wasn't in public dollars wasn't cocaine addicts, to which many of our people still have that affliction. It became opiates. Now, who has opiate problems? We always had opiate problems. I mean,
right,
if that was
right.
the case, they could have been pouring some money out in our community, correct?
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah, but that didn't happen. You know, but now
right.
Heather, she copped a little opiate habit. And this has just started. You know, now, trust me, I'm not being racist in that sense. I think everybody should get treatment. But I just watch how they disseminate the money when it's their people who are hurting now.
Right.
You know what
right.
I'm saying? Now all of a sudden we got a drug problem. When did that start? You know what I'm saying?
Well,
so,
you know,
we got to think.
Because when I was on the police department, that was one of the things we got to get trained and have the narco pouches and so forth, just in case you run into somebody that's, you know, having some heroin or something like that. So we had to get some training for that. But, you know, I don't know too many officers where that was a priority in the Milwaukee area.
Right.
I don't know how many officers were trained in that. And that's a question I didn't ask. And so
it
I just tried to find it out, stuff like that.
It didn't
you know,
exist
because,
until then. Yeah.
I'm pretty curious about that because it's like because we certainly do see them at the hospital. You know, and they're from the Milwaukee area, but whether they go to the suburbs and get this or hang out this way and that way in a I mean, it's just a number of different scenarios and situations how things come up. But, yeah, that is very interesting. And I'm so glad. Well, I definitely know you would speak out on that and bring attention to that. You know, the unfairness and just how people are just targeted and treated different just because, you know, of the color of the skin that we're in.
Yeah, I've done it, and trust me, it has been, you know, a challenge. But, you know, you got to live with yourself. Therein lies the Dr. McManus's, the Dr. Howard Fuller's, and so on and so forth. Man, we got to speak on this stuff. When we see injustices, we got to speak on it. We can't sit there, you know, and get our bellies full while our people are starving and stuff, you know. But there's a punitive action with that because the majority of us don't do it. And those are the ones who are rewarded. I'm talking about in our circle, us. You know. So because you reinforce, you know, positively, so you think, you know, but what does it profit a man to gain the world and to lose his soul? And what can you give in exchange for your soul? So
At your clinic, I mean you're able to reach out to a lot of people in the community. I mean, is there an insurance based situation there? What if they don't have insurance, and you know, how are they getting in contact with you?
Good question. Well, part of our, well, the majority of our funding comes from Milwaukee County for the free services. And what we do, we're called an access point. There's, I'm going to shout out to everybody that does it. Impact does it. You know, it used to be demographic because of when it be pre-COVID, you know. They were on the south side. We were on the north side. And now we're doing telehealth. I'm saying that to say that WCS was going primarily into the prisons and stuff and things of that nature. So we're funded through that to do assessments on people for mental health and alcohol and drug problems. And then we place them according to what that assessment turns out to the level of care that they need. So if they need residential treatment, if they need day treatment, if they need outpatient, you know, and we also do funding and we also do a treatment ourselves on an outpatient. And we take insurance, you know, money on a slide and scale. Don't tell everybody I said that. If you ain't got some money, we still gonna see you. don't tell everybody I said that, though. But, no, seriously,
well,
see,
that, and
that's
awesome.
What we do.
Not turning people away, you know, knowing that they have a place to go. And that's important.
And we can also help them get insurance, too. So that's the other piece of that. So a place for vocational rehabilitation, like, you know, job search. In that assessment comes a lot of different things, you know, not just, you know, putting you in treatment, but the other, what they call auxiliary things, you know, to ancillary things for your treatment. So if a man wants to recover, he needs a job. A man wants to recover, he needs to have a place to stay, you know, so on and so forth. So we help set people up in those particular areas, deal with people holistically, you know. And we've been doing it since 98, and I love it.
Wow.
I love to see people, the outcomes of a person who can, you know, help see, which is a silent killer in our community, testing, you know. Again, with the COVID, we can't do that like we used to with Viva. It used to be called ARCW. So there's a lot of stuff that's positive going on in our community, and we're not the only one. There's clinics ran by African Americans who are who are diligent in what they do. Like I said, I thank God for this new cohort of people who are up under us in age and stuff, and who are opening up businesses, and I love to support them, you know. But that's what we do, and that's what we've been doing, you know. It's a challenge now, you know. I think everybody's been challenged with this whole thing, you know, because we're doing a lot of telehealth. We're not doing face-to-face for practical reasons, you know.
Right.
Think about maybe 20 people on my caseload had COVID, so I would have had it 20 times if I'd have seen them face-to-face, you know. But thank God for the technology to be able to reach out to people. So we're still doing it. We can be reached at 263-6000. Of course, that's 414-263-6000. We're open Monday through Friday, but we're also open on call, you know, so if somebody has an emergency, there's, you can call and we'll answer you.
Most definitely.
Yeah, so, you know, and this is what we do. We have the staff looks like the people, not that we don't hire other ethnic groups, we have and do, but they, you got to have the heart of our people, you know what I'm saying? And if you us,
well,
you got to
have
the heart of us, too.
The word that you just said, having the heart of our people, and, you know, and people that look like us, and yeah, we're not excluding other people of ethnic backgrounds, this, that, and whatever. Mm-hmm. But I think last week I indicated that I wanted to try to find someone and reach out to get a contact number for people that are in need, that may be suffering, need help, and so forth. So I'm so glad that you were able to provide that information and put that number out, and if you could do it just one more time.
Yes, my brother. 28. Let me tell you where we are. 2821
yes.
Northville Phillips Avenue. You know this. We know this. 4th Street, 4th and Locust, right? We're the police station, Kitty Corner from there. That big building, it used to be called the MATC building, is Welford Sanders, which is a brother who was an architect. Named after him, they turned one part into lofts where people have some decent living, and the other part where we have office buildings, kind of like what you were talking about on North Avenue. Everybody in there does social services. 2821 North, Vale Phillips, Suite 210. Our number is 414-263-6000.
All right.
Well, you take most insurances.
Any closing
comments?
Well,
I want to say, man, I thank you for this opportunity to, you know, express. We need this kind of stuff every day, to be honest with you. I think that, you know, again, I want to conclude with, you know, we have post-traumatic resilience, strength, okay? You know, people who have, you know, been able to go through transatlantic slavery all the way to here, to there. We're not survivors. We are the original people who are really the ones who manifest the strength, okay? You know, when you look at us, you see power. Don't believe the hype. Don't believe the narrative. We can do it. We are going to do it. We're going to continue to be strong. 10,000 years from now, when you look back, you'll see us, you know, because we was in the beginning. Yeah. We're going to be in the end.
All right. Well, thank you, Mr. Foxy. And we're going to have you on again. I would really love to have you again. And I think it was just so important. And we just need people know that there's warriors like you that are out there and just working for the betterment of the people to just free our people of all these issues and to provide the information and the support needed. So, again, we thank you. And this is Warrior's Way, continuing the fight. This is your brother, Kwazi. To all, thank you for joining us tonight, and we look forward to seeing you next Thursday. All right, good night.
Thank you, my brother. Hotel.
When the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, one day, when the war is won, we will be sure.
The heavens, no man, no weapon formed against death, glory is destined. Everyday women and men become legends. Sins that go against our skin become blessings. The movement is a rhythm to us. Freedom is like religion to us. Justice is juxtaposition in us. Justice for all just ain't specific enough. One son died, the spirit is revisiting us. True and living in us, resistance is us. That's why Rosa sat on the bus. That's why we walk through Ferguson with our hands up. When it go down, we woman and man up. They say stay down, and we stand up. Shots be on the ground, the camera panned up. King pointed to the mountaintop, and we ran up.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours. It will be ours. Oh, Lord.
Woman and child, even Jesus got his crown in front of a crowd. They march with the torch, we gon' run with it now. Never look back, we done gone hundreds of miles. From dark roads, heroes, to become a hero. Facing the league of justice, his power was the people. Enemy is lethal, a king became regal. Saw the face of Jim Crow under a bald ego. No one can win the war individually. It takes the wisdom of the elders and young people's energy. Welcome to the story we call Victory. The coming of the Lord, my eyes have seen the glory.
One day, when the glory comes, it will be ours, it will be ours. Oh,
glory, glory,
glory,
glory.